You are the 10, though.
The look he gave me, he was so disgusted.
We don't go, hey, we won the national title. Good job.
Now everybody get your ass back to class.
Did I just out myself for having some sort of condition down there?
Some sort of glandular condition. We're just talking.
I like you, but you know.
You're not in like with me.
I have a girlfriend, man. I'm sorry.
You're not a side scroller.
No.
I'm
not a midnight golfer.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. I don't know what to call this, Mr. Prime Time Ethan Noroff is in the building today.
We could call it the Prime Time Hour, just saying.
The Prime Time Hour? An hour of prime time?
It's not prime time all the time.
Okay, so here's what's going on. I'll let you and the audience know. I don't know what happened to Booza Basketball. I have no idea.
It went the same place Wesley Matthews' three-point shot went, and that is in a far, far away location.
Yes, so I bought all this equipment, right? Because the Casa Booza Basketball does not look anywhere near the same like it used to. It used to be just two guys drinking a beer around a not-so-nice mic. And now we have all this equipment.
I feel like I'm in the booth with Damian Lillard right now.
Yes. So I wanted to take this to the next level. Los is, I don't know. I don't know where he is.
Only Los knows.
I believe he just ran the New York City Marathon, but...
He also may be on Mars. We're not sure.
I haven't seen him. I've seen him one time in the last, like, 3 months.
He's like that guy who might exist and might not. You're just not quite sure. But you keep seeing him on Facebook, so you know he's somewhere. Kind of like the male version of Carmen Sandiego for our older listeners.
Yes. So while Los is away doing some other commitments, I wish him the best of luck, but I want to move forward. So, you know, essentially we're turning this into a whole platform. We're going to Nerdist it up. We're going to, you know, Grantland it up. We're going to have a bunch of different shows on this network. So I want to become bigger. I want this to grow.
Bigger growth is better growth.
Yes, that's what my last girlfriend told me while she was walking out the door.
That is indeed what she said.
So, I want to talk basketball. And I got Mr. AmeriLeague himself, Primetime Ethan Noroff, Mr. Roto-World, Mr. Keys to the Kingdom, Mr. Got 50 Basketball Players in his phone.
Mr. Steal Your Girl as well.
And Mr. Steal Your Girl. I got to ask you some questions since I got you here. I have been a basketball-holic the last couple weeks. I think it's been about 2 weeks since the season began.
I know you're loving some DeMarcus Cousins in those DraftKings lineups.
You know what? I haven't been taking him. He costs too much money. Okay. All right. You want to talk DraftKings?
We could talk a little bit.
Let's start with DraftKings. So it's a lot of fun. It keeps you into the season. One thing I'm noticing is you're a fool if you don't have James Harden in your lineup. It was Russell Westbrook there for a minute.
For those listeners who may be unfamiliar, DraftKings is what we like to call our DFS games. Those are daily fantasy games. You can do cash.
I wondered what that meant.
You can do tournaments, right? Those are our DFS games. And these are the kind of lineups that we can build on a nightly basis. You get a salary. You get to choose what kind of team you put together. Now, you want some hogs in there, as Dr. Shark was saying.
No, really quick, Primetime, you don't work. You work for Roto-World, but you don't do DFS. You do weekly, right? You do like fantasy basketball.
I do both.
Okay.
I do more of the season-long formats, but I do dabble in some daily cash games and tournaments as well.
Okay, and I'm sure there's a big audience out there who, you know, wants to hear some of the expert picks.
Well, I think it really depends on any specific night's matchup. Now, what I like to do is I say, okay, let's say this guy cost me $5,000.
Right.
That means he's going to have to give me at least 20 DraftKings points to
be really? Worth my investment. There's a number there? Really?
I like to go for at least 3, if not 4 times the investment price in terms of total points. That seems to be a positive ROI strategy. Now, that gets difficult when you take those high-priced studs like a James Harden, like a DeMarcus Cousins, right? Because if they cost $10,000, they got to put up a pretty big night. But the good thing is James Harden has been putting up an absolutely historic season.
Right.
He's got a very real chance to average 30 or more points and 10 or more assists, and that's just insane to say out loud.
I've been loving Kevin Love.
We're feeling the love for Kevin Love.
Don't love the man, love the game. Apparently, he found where he belongs.
It's amazing. Those conversations about how he and LeBron don't fit so well together, they just seem to have fallen by the wayside.
Cool. So, all right, let's get out of this DFS, because I love fantasy sports, but I'm more of a fan of narratives. I'm a storyteller. I'm a writer. I love what's the story. And one of my biggest issues, I guess, with the politics and the presidential campaign and everything that just happened, we've been looking at the media, but we haven't done anything about the media. They overdo things prime time.
Well, it's their job to sell the story.
Yeah, but they pick the story and they run it into the ground. And it drives me crazy because they choose the story. They don't look at what the story actually is.
The thing that I really have a hard time with the media is this, is you have access to these players more so than anyone else, more so than fans, even sometimes more so than the guys in the front office. You have access to these guys. You can ask them very good and specific questions that get detailed answers that otherwise wouldn't exist. And they go into the locker room and they say, hey, that was a good game tonight. How are you feeling out there? What kind of question is that?
Yeah.
What kind of question is
that? I think if you brought me into a locker room, we'd have a lot of fun. I'd ask a lot of good questions. We'd have some stunning insight. We had Bruce the Brewer on here for Beer 101 a while back.
Double B.
One of the best episodes we ever had. I was just asking him those hard-hitting questions, making some jokes, in between, talking about Marty McFly and Back to the Future Part 3.
Well, it's all about lowering the walls of access, right? That's why we even watch what the media has to do when we're talking about basketball, because we're not there every day. We don't see these players every day. We're not in the flesh. So anything that they can do to lower those walls of access, to make those players feel more human, right, it's actually beneficial for us because we get another layer of that player, more of an investment in that player. When it's just the generic questions and the fans are already tired of it, imagine how the player must feel about it when he hears the same question 4 or 5 times in every city he goes to.
So I guess what's interesting for me is that the media is focusing on the Kevin Durant Golden State storyline.
Of course.
But the first couple weeks, I've been invested in like about 5 or 6 storylines around the league. My favorite is the Anthony Davis storyline. Man, this guy came out, you want to talk about DraftKings, this guy came out and was putting up numbers. I think he had 50 points in his opening game. He did almost the exact same thing in his second game. Almost beat the Warriors. Like, man, you want to talk about the Warriors looking beatable. Find yourself a strong inside guy and go in there and demolish him. And that's what Anthony Davis was trying to do.
If Anthony Davis had any help on that team currently, the Pelicans would be in a much better state.
And that's my issue, right? I think in the last episode we were talking about the GM survey. And one of my problems is everyone likes to write off LeBron. Everyone likes to go, if you could have any player in the NBA, who would you have? And they always say, well, I'd have Anthony Davis, or I'd have James Harden, or I'd have this. And I go, the thing that makes LeBron so great is his game is phenomenal on the court, but also he knows how to make those shrewd, just little, he does the little things. He knows how to say the right thing to a certain player. He knows how to build people around him. He knows how to get things done. He's a man who knows what he wants and how to get it, whereas a lot of these players are just kind of sitting there hopeless. Like, hey, man, you got to surround me with talent. No, it's starting to get to the point. You have the power. You could go get your own talent now. Look what LeBron did. He did it twice. He did it in Cleveland, and he did. Think about this, right? The letter. A lot of people didn't report about the letter that he said where, he was talking about, oh, I'm back in Cleveland, and he left out all the names of the guys he planned to trade.
He did.
He didn't say, hey, man, Deion Waiters.
Good. Didn't even mention Andrew Wiggins.
Didn't mention Wiggins because he knew what he was going to do, because he didn't just go to Cleveland and go, I'm just going to hope they surround me with talent. He goes, I'm a sign, but you're going to trade Andrew Wiggins, go get me Kevin Love, and you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And they said, done deal, LeBron. He made the trades. He's the best GM in the league.
Well, he's the best GM. He's also the best agent because he got J.R. Smith nearly $60 million when there were no other bidders in the field. And I think with LeBron, you got to assess that situation very uniquely, right? He went down to Miami, learned a lot about himself, and I think kind of matured as a man and as a player. Let's compare it to his collegiate experience, if you will, because he was there for 4 years. Kind of learned how to grow up and learn how to do some of those leadership qualities that you're talking about. Now, going back to the original question, if we're talking about guys that you'd rather start a team with today, or a guy that you need to win with for the next year only, those are two very different questions to me. Because if you're asking me for a guy, one guy that you're going to start your team with that you need to win this year with, I'll still take LeBron right now. But if you're telling me that I need to pick one guy to start a team with from scratch for the next 10 years, I'm not taking LeBron. I'm taking Carl Anthony Towns.
Right. But my issue is that's not going to get you a championship like it would with LeBron.
Correct.
I love Towns. I love Thibodeau. Man, did you see what Thibodeau and the T-Wolves did the other day? I forget who they were playing, but they were up. They had 70 points in the first half.
I believe they were playing Orlando.
That's right.
Like they were slapping a bag back at college that was filled with Franzia wine right out of the box.
And that's well said. Way over my head. But my issue is that, so I love Thibodeau, but the problem has always been he can't score. His teams don't score. Put up 70 points in the first half. You shut my mouth.
Well, I think Andrew Wiggins, everybody has been waiting for Wiggins to sort of blossom into this next-level player. And people forget that it's only his third year. He's still very young. And I think we're starting to see the next step with Wiggins as a scorer, right? Yeah. He's always been, you know, he can get his points, but he hasn't necessarily been the most efficient. He hasn't necessarily had an outside game. He hasn't necessarily had the supporting stats. But now that he's starting to hit the three-point shot with some level of consistency, he can use that athleticism to drive. He can hit the mid-range as a result. It really opens up the entire floor. Of course, it certainly helps that Zach LaVine has really, really come on strongly in his transition to shooting guard. Of course, it helps that Karl Anthony Towns is inside in the middle. Of course, it helps that Gorgui Dieng is there to clean up the glass. But Wiggins, to me, is really the key in Minnesota. If they can get him playing at a true superstar level and move forward with he and Karl Anthony Towns, boy, that team's going to be good for a long time.
And that's the thing about I like that team is that while Golden State got rid of their rim protectors, I like a team that goes, well, we don't have, you know, a guy that does every, like LeBron does nine things. You get rid of him, you're done. But those nine things, you kind of want one player to do two of those. You don't want another player to do one of those. You stack your team full of shooters. Who's going to be that interior big man that you need? Minnesota has all the right pieces. They got a passer, they got a couple shooters, they got stars who could get those calls, which is always important. That was one of the problems. I forget, it was like last year where there was a team in the playoffs, so I was like, you're gonna get no star calls. I think it was Atlanta. Atlanta didn't have any stars, so they can't
Atlanta
get
Atlanta is that team every year.
Yeah. And Milwaukee was for a long time. Not anymore. But so Minnesota has all the right pieces, like that Gorgui Dieng. I love everything. They have everything, and they got the coach, so they could end up being a title contender here in a couple years.
Well, I think the big question NBA teams are now facing in this new landscape is, do we build a team of megastars like the Warriors have done and sacrifice our depth in the process, or do we try and build a team that of interchangeable parts, sort of like what you see with the Lakers right now? Because no matter who's on the floor, you can just take out Jordan Clarkson, put in Lou Williams. You can take out Julius Randle, put in Larry Nance. You can even take out Timofey Mozgov and put in Tariq Black. So they have a lot of these interchangeable parts right now where there's no real drop-off to that second unit. So in the regular season, when you see the Warriors resting their stars and Durant and Curry are not on the floor together, or maybe Klay Thompson's taking a breather, and instead of those guys, you're running out names like Ian Clark and rookie Patrick McCall, who I like, but I mean, that's no Kevin Durant, right? And then you've sacrificed a lot of that depth. David West probably should have retired about 5 years ago at this point. And so you see the decline in their play. Now, does that team have that same substitution pattern when it comes time for the playoffs? No, of course not. They're going to lean on their stars. And that team is more likely to be successful in the playoffs, right? How are you going to beat those four stars together in four out of seven games? That's very difficult. But for the regular season, especially for a team like the Lakers who are young, they run, they're very competitive. They're averaging like 50 bench points a game right now because they have the firepower off the bench. That's a hard team to beat during the regular season, especially if you're in the midst of four games in 5 nights or three games on the road in the back end of a back-to-back set. That's a tough team to come in and play. This is a team Vegas said was going to win 24, 25 games this year. They've already got 5 wins. It hasn't even been 10 games of the season.
Yeah. So going off that, just tell me, is this not one of the most fun seasons in the first 2 weeks? Like, I've had more fun in this NBA season than maybe the last 10 years. I've had a blast, and it's because of teams like the Lakers. I mean, there's so many stories. I could watch every game and go, well, let me check in and see what's going on with this narrative. Let me check in and see what's going on with this story. The Lakers are telling a fantastic story. They're so happy to be playing together. A bunch of young rookies, fun to watch. The T-Wolves putting together some grit and toughness. Watching New York go out there and screw stuff up because, you know, I love Joakim Noah, but, you know, Derek and Carmelo and that freight train and holding back Porzingis, Chicago with I Hate Rondo, but Dwayne Wade's there, Jimmy Butler developing, and then My favorite, well, one of my favorite stories is, so we saw Wiggins, and it looks like he might be more of a Jimmy Butler than LeBron.
I would say that's probably fair.
But finally, I get to see Jabari, who I said I loved. He's coming out of his shell.
Some of his teammates did say that he could be an all-star this year, and it's looking like he just might be.
Yeah. I said, I always compared his game to Carmelo, and now it's starting to become polished.
That's a fair comparison, and I think a lot of people with Jabari forget that, you know, he suffered that nasty ACL tear, and that's an injury that guys come back from the next year, but it really takes 2 years to come all the way back, because it's not just a guy, you know, you or me walking down the street has to worry about walking a straight line. You have to be an elite athlete to be in the NBA every night and pouring it in every night. You have to be in the upper half a percentile of whatever you want to call that sphere, right? Of athleticism, of being in shape, of having it all together. And it takes time. It takes time to recover from that type of injury. And those guys are often so big, whether they're big and strong or big and tall, that they just have more to support. So I like to judge those guys about 2 years out and then say, okay, let's look at how this player is looking now. And so far, Jabari Parker looks like the player we saw in the second half of last year. That player was a borderline all-star.
Mm. Give me five guys that have surprised you, either by becoming worse or becoming better. Some where you go, ooh, I didn't expect that.
Okay, let's start with your Chicago Bulls, shall we?
Yes.
Bobby Portis, where you at, dude? Last year, we saw a lot of good things from Bobby Portis. Brought energy off the bench.
Played great in the summer league.
Was really rebounding the basketball well. This year, he can't get playing time over Nikolai Mirotic, who's inconsistent at best. Taj Gibson is a rock, and I got a big soft spot for Taj. I think he's too often overlooked. But Bobby Portis, this is the guy who people were saying, oh, Chicago's got something here. This could be a piece to their future. And instead, he's buried on the bench, can't even get in the rotation.
All right, that's one.
So that's one. I say another guy who surprised me this year, right, is Tariq Black from the Lakers. Tariq Black has played a really good brand of basketball. And he's come in behind Mozgov. He's protecting the paint. He's being fearless. He's giving them some hustle and athleticism. He's the kind of player that Lakers fans for so long wanted Jordan Hill to be. But Jordan Hill fell in love with the jump shot. Didn't always give a consistent effort on both sides of the floor. And Tariq Black has stepped into that role and done it really well. And
where's he at now? Where'd Jordan Hill go?
Jordan Hill is actually with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Racking
up DNP CDs on the bench.
That's a good piece to have, though, if you
get an injury. It's a good emergency piece. You know, they brought him in after, I believe it was shortly after they said that Pekovic wouldn't be playing this season because of his chronic ankle and foot injuries. So that's that guy, Nikola Pekovic, not even in their plans anymore.
You mentioned the Lakers big man. What's up with the Lakers loving this Zubac guy? Mm-hmm. You're a Lakers fan.
It's the Zubats.
Yeah, what's the deal with this guy? I don't see anything. Is he supposed to be decent?
He a lot of people have compared him or his game to Marc Gasol's. He's very young. He's 19 years old. He's got no strength to speak of for a guy of his size. He's raw. He's still growing. He's still developing. I think he could be an interesting piece in the future. Right now, he fouls everything in his sight. And, you know, you can't be averaging six fouls.
That sounds like my Saturday night at the bar.
So, you know, he's still got some work to do. I think he's a better player than a lot of people maybe projected him to be, considering he slipped to the second round. He probably should have been a first-round pick. But he's young, he's raw, he's athletic, he's working on that sky hook, so that's always a good thing.
Can somebody please master the sky hook, please?
I think a lot of big men today have fallen in love with the idea of, oh, I'm going to stretch the floor, I'm going to become a three-point shooter, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Well, if you're a guy who's 7 feet tall and 260 pounds and you can just body people on the inside, why don't you make it easier for yourself and just, you know, body people on the inside?
That's beautiful.
Just trying to say it like I always do, man. All right, so let's get back to these surprise players.
Somebody else.
All right, so Tariq Black, right? We have Bobby Portis. I would say let's throw Larry Nance in there as well while we're talking about the Lakers.
Leave Larry Nance alone. I love Larry Nance.
No, for
go
good Pokes. For good reason.
Okay, yeah.
For good reason.
Damn
he's,
right.
He's really stepped in and played well. Luke Walton really likes those lineups that have Julius Randle and Larry Nance occupying the front court positions, and I think it's worked out well. You know, they play a brand of small ball, and there's something to be said sometimes for those guys who stay in college for 4 years. They get some of the fundamentals a little deeper. They learn how to play the game and a little bit more of an understanding of what team basketball looks like. And Nance is that guy who just plays within the flow of the game, and he always brings it on both ends. And he's been more than Lakers fans could have ever expected
him. He's a hustle guy.
He really is, but he's turning into somebody who can be more than just a hustle guy.
He's going to have a job on the Pacers in a couple years, mark my words.
He is like Tyler Hansbrough on steroids.
Where's he at?
Tyler Hansbrough, unsigned.
Really?
Unsigned.
He lost his job? He was in Toronto last I checked.
He was in Toronto. He then went down to Charlotte.
Oh, that's right. He
obscured into...
Because he's a Tar Heel, and Jordan had to take a Tar Heel. Uh-huh.
He went into the darkness that Charlotte offers, I suppose.
Is Michael Jordan the worst GM in the league?
No. That title currently belongs to Orlando's Rob Hennigan.
Okay, fair enough.
Because Rob Hennigan said, in an effort to make the playoffs last year, I'm going to trade one of my best young players, Tobias Harris, to Detroit, not get any draft picks in return, and only give me back Brandon Jennings and Ersan Ilyasova.
Ilyasova's gone, and Jennings is gone now, too.
They're both gone. Yeah. It was absolutely an
indefensible trade. Jennings is the backup in New York, I believe.
He is, and Ilyasova is trusting the process in Philadelphia right now. So, absolutely indefensible.
Talk about shocks for me. Joel Embiid coming out and playing.
How could we not talk about Joel Embiid? And that's another surprise player on my list, I would say. I mean,
the only person who talks more about Joel Embiid than us is Joel Embiid.
It's true. And, you know, you look at this guy, and he's on a really strict minutes restriction. He hasn't played in 2 years. Obviously, the Sixers are going to treat him with kid gloves. But you look at his per 36 numbers, and he's doing stuff that really only Wilt Chamberlain did before him. And obviously, the sample size.
You just got caught.
Yeah, the sample size is not quite there, okay? But, I mean, these numbers that he's putting up are nothing short of absolutely ridiculous. He's shooting it from the three-point line with extreme effectiveness. He's going inside, performing the dream shake. He's crossing guys over. He's got a post game. I mean, if this guy were a free agent right now, despite the fact that he has not played for the last 2 years and has fewer than 10 professional games under his belt, I could almost sit here and guarantee to you that he would get a max deal.
You know what I love about you is you have a soft spot in your heart for the bums of the NBA. And I'm not talking about like Joel Embiid, but man, you know the lower end players. And it's like you cherish them, man. It's like they're your children.
It's tough to get into the NBA and stick.
Like you want to bring up Mo Harkless every day. And I'm like, man, Mo Harkless could be substituted for Captain Crunch for all I know. And I wouldn't even notice.
Let's talk about Mo Harkless. He's another guy who could fit on my surprise list. Blazers went out. They spent $145 million to retain Allen Crabb and to bring in Evan Turner. And you know who's out playing them both? Ugh. Mo Harkless. Ugh. And yes, that is the right reaction to $145 million on those two. It's a real, that's
Can I just nasty. Get a little bit of money? Can somebody pay my student loans just because, you know, I'm such a basketball fan. They go, you know what? We'll pay your student loans for you. We waste so much other money.
Just sign me for training camp. Guarantee me $100,000. Cut me immediately. I'll go to the D League. I'll scrap it up down there, and I'll collect my check. I'm happy.
Pay me to go out like on your rival team's court and just run out butt naked and pay my student loans to do that, and I'll do it.
That is quite the image.
Just because it'll be the curse of the naked fat man. They'll never win another championship because that fat man streaked across their parquet.
The curse of the naked fat man is brought to you by Chick-fil-A. Come in today. Try our nuggets, 99 cents for a limited time.
Man, my roommate. Okay, enough basketball for here for 30 seconds.
Chick-fil-A inspired story coming in 3, 2, 1.
Roommate goes, hey, let's get our third roommate. Oh, Dr. Thunder tells our third roommate, Tall Cat Hank, to go ahead and pick us up some Chick-fil-A. He's going to be in the area. And so, you know, Tall Cat offered. And so Dr. Thunder obliged, and he comes home, and he's got Chick-fil-A for himself and Dr. Thunder, but forgot to bring me home any.
And the shark does not swim well with friends when he's
And I was the saddest I've ever been in my life, because they sat there and enjoyed Chick-fil-A without me, and they ended up feeling bad. And so the next day I got home and go, hey, nobody happened to get any Chick-fil-A while I was out. Just, you know, I was being snarky. And then they come up and they pull out 5 Chick-fil-A sandwiches and go, pick 2, you know, that you want. And I did. And I had the spicy and I had the deluxe. And I was they were like, we felt so bad.
But did you have any nuggets?
I didn't have any nuggets.
You made a great mistake.
No. The number one's the best thing they do.
Listeners, I'm going to ask you to chime in here. Please leave a comment. Write us in.
I don't know where anymore. Honestly, I don't even know where this podcast is landing at this point. I got to put some extra work into this.
Well, it will land on my Twitter feed. That's a promise.
There you go. We'll take our talents to Roto-World.
You can find my Twitter feed at Ethan_Noroff. That's ETHAN_NOROF. Look me up. It's worth it. I promise.
Very nice. So anyway, a lot of stories in the NBA. Is this James Harden thing going to last?
How could it not? Look at the Rockets roster.
What's their record?
I do not know off the top
of my head. Are they winning?
They're at least 500.
Oh, jeez. I was reading an article the other day that talked about he's in line for one of the best statistical seasons in the NBA history. He's averaging like 32 and like 13 assists, which is two more than Oscar had the year that Oscar had that legendary year. He doesn't have the rebounds, but you know what he does have? The turnovers. Guy turned it over seven times in the game last week.
Well, when the ball is constantly in your hands and you're being asked to do everything, assist on every basket and or score.
Who else is on that? Turn it over. Who else is on that team?
Just real quick with James Harden.
Is Corey Brewer still on that team?
Corey Brewer is still on.
You can't get the ball to Corey Brewer. Corey Brewer is one of the four best players Joakim Noah said he ever played with.
Corey Brewer cannot shoot.
Yeah, but he can get to the basket. He's like 6'7", 6'8".
They don't need somebody to get to the basket.
He is the definition of wingman. It looks like he's got wings. He flies to the basket.
I call him the pterodactyl.
Yeah, beautiful.
Just at the time this podcast was being recorded, James Harden currently averaging 30.6 points per game, 13.0 assists per game, and a true shooting percentage of 65.1%. So despite the turnovers, I would say that classifies as a historic start.
You son of a... Mike D'Antoni can keep his job.
Yeah, it's his first year. They brought him in to redesign that team and that offense to have Harden at the epicenter. And you got to remember that Harden renegotiated his contract, extended it with Houston this summer, and now they've built a team of guys around Harden with guys like Ryan Anderson, who they paid $80 million to, guys like Eric Gordon, who they gave more than $50 million to space the floor, and it opens things up for Harden to drive in the lane, either take it to the basket and get fouled, which he's very good at doing, and going to that free throw line, or kicking it out for the open shot. And then you've still got guys like Corey Brewer, your boy. You've still got guys like Trevor Ariza, right, who can still knock down those shots.
Who's their center?
That's the big question mark. Clint Capella.
Oh, he's been doing well.
He's all right. He's a little inconsistent. He can't shoot free throws to save his life. So that's a concern, right?
Him and every other big man.
Well,
somebody's shooting granny style, I forget.
Carl Anthony Towns, the Rockets have a rookie who's in the D League right now who shoots granny style.
Got to.
Okay. Carl Anthony Towns shoots it well from the free throw line. And you know who's another surprise player for me who shoots it well from the free throw line, who's real big? One of Dr. Thunder's favorite players, Miles Turner.
Miles Turner's been having a hell of a year. Before we get, we'll move to the Pacers, but really quick, you know who Mike D'Antoni reminds me of?
The Pringles man?
Ripley, well, he does. Ripley from Aliens. Like, and the reason is because she's had so many lives. I forget which movie it was. Was it the third one where she died, or was it the fourth or something? I don't remember. But so she dies. Mm-hmm. She's dead. That's it. And then they bring her back.
D'Antoni has had many lives.
And then they go, hey, how did you survive the alien? And she goes, I didn't survive. I died. That's him, man. He had that career. He was with Phoenix. He was fighting the aliens right at the end where she's fighting that alien, and then she eventually dies but comes back, man. But guy's a cat.
Think of D'Antoni like that player who had that one really good year, and then several disappointing years after, and he keeps getting signed. You go, God, how does this guy keep getting chances?
That happened to Mike Brown.
That's Mike D'Antoni.
That's a lot of people, man. A lot of people live off of that one thing that they did years ago. Mm-hmm. And Kanye still got a career.
And to D'Antoni's credit, I mean, the way that the NBA is played now, pace and space, run fast, play hard, play fast, but play with a purpose, and really extending it out to the three-point line, that's a lot of D'Antoni. He sort of made that blueprint.
Yeah.
The issue is you still got to play defense, and the Rockets still don't play any defense.
Well said. Indiana Pacers.
Talk to me.
Love them.
Well, I think Larry Bird.
Runner up in the East. I said it before the season. They're gonna go to the Eastern Conference Finals and get snacked on by LeBron.
I think Larry Bird decided. He said last year, so going into the 2015-16 season, he said he wanted to play faster. Said he wanted to play with a purpose. Right?
Nate Mack can run.
Frank Vogel did not want to play that up tempo game. Paul George did not want to play power forward. And I don't blame either one of them because Vogel is a defensive-minded coach. That's not his thing. Okay, that's why he's no longer with the Pacers. And Paul George is now at small forward because, smartly, they acquired a power forward in Thaddeus Young, who, A, can play power forward, and, B, fits into that new team that they've built. They brought in Jeff Teague. I like that trade a lot for them, right? They brought in Jeff Teague. They still got Monte Ellis at the two. Now, that backcourt's a little small for my liking, and Ellis has seen his role sort of reduced drastically in terms of his offensive involvement, considering all of the options now, because you've got Teague, you've got Ellis, you've got Paul George, who's going to be the captain on offense, right? He's going to be taking most of the shots. You've got Thaddeus Young, who's now going to be taking shots. And Miles Turner's ascension into this really legit young big man, who's one of the better ones in the NBA. I mean, he's blocking shots, he's scoring efficiently, he's getting inside. And opponents are learning that Miles Turner should be feared at the rim, because he can really protect the paint very well. So when you've got Paul George, you've got Turner, you've got Teague.
He's got hair like a pineapple, though.
He does have hair
like a pineapple. He's pineapple head Miles Turner.
He is pineapple head Miles Turner.
But man,
pineapple head can play.
He can go.
He can play. And you know, it's funny, because he was one of those guys who slipped in the draft when people said, well, he doesn't run the right way, so we're not going to take him. Boy, does that look dumb now.
They'd rather have, you know, Steve Francis. Steve Francis could run the right way. Out the gym.
I personally miss the days of Katino Mobley.
I mean, he's better than ever now with that gray beard and
Cat
that gray.
Mobley is still tearing up.
He's about 30 years old. He's
closer to 60 than he is 30.
No, he's like 30 years old. He looks Uncle Drew.
Definitely not 30. Because Mobley is definitely not
30. He retired young.
Katino Mobley retired when he was 8. So
they have, you know, I've been loving NBA 2K17, and I don't know if you've played it, but the thing I've always loved about this game now, because for like the last 2 or 3 years, they do like a trading card game kind of where it's called My Team Mode. Have you heard of this? Mm-hmm. And what they do is you get a bunch of you get starter packs, and it's a bunch of crappy players. Like, I think some of my original players were
Chris Mim level.
Gary Harris was like my best player.
Okay, not bad, but not a guy you
want to I had that dude that we were just talking about from New York, Los Angeles, Zubac. He was my starting center.
Zubats.
That's fine, whatever.
Ivica Zubats.
And so those were like some of your starting caliber players.
Quick side note on Zubats, girlfriend. Very good looking woman. Good job, Ivica.
We'll take a look later. But anyway, I always wanted an opportunity to play some of the throwback characters, some of the old characters. And now you get the right packs and they'll give you like, oh, rookie rewind. You'll unlock a pack from, you know, characters' rookie years. And then there's like the throwback players. And I think this time it's from like Phoenix Suns and Houston Rockets or something like that.
Do you have any Nate Tiny Archibald or any Alex English?
Not yet, but they were on last year's, I think.
The Alex English Nuggets jersey with the rainbow front is one of my favorite jerseys of all time.
My starting power forward is rookie Chris Webber.
That's a good card.
Yeah.
Just make sure he doesn't try and call any timeouts.
And now they just came up with, come on, dude, that's really disrespectful.
I'm sorry, C-Web. I'm still good for that $2 million you told me you were going to give me.
He was going to give you $2 million?
He did say that.
Is that the AmeriLeague thing?
Nope, he just wanted to invest in the Norov potential.
Okay, we're going to have to talk about that later.
We will.
I'd invest, but it wouldn't be $2 million. It'd be like a can of peas and a couple socks. Pumas.
I do need to eat. I don't know that I'll have any Pumas in my collection.
Okay.
But I may sell them on eBay to get some Jordans.
You want to see a shoe collection? Talk to Primetime.
I have a few pairs.
But anyway, they just came out with a deep shooter pack. You know who my starting shooting guard is now?
Kyle Korver.
Michael Redd.
Ooh, loved Michael Redd, the sweet shooting lefty in Milwaukee.
Where'd he come from? Was he undrafted or he was a second round pick?
I believe he was a second round pick.
And I think he like played with Ray Allen when they were at Milwaukee, and that was when he broke out.
Might have been the transition into Ray Allen's next chapter was Michael Redd's coming out party.
Yeah, and he was hot for about 2 years. I don't know. It makes me wonder sometimes, like, was he really good and just only got a chance for a couple years? Was he injured? Or is that one of those things that a guy's not good enough, but he plays lights out for, like, a year or two? Like, we don't know. Is Jeremy Lin really a good player, or is he just getting lucky in Brooklyn and New York? I don't know.
It's why it's so impressive to me, and I don't think enough credit is given to those players who are truly great for 10-plus years in the NBA.
Yeah.
And not to be like that guy who brings up Kobe, but when you look at a Kobe Bryant, who was basically dominant in the NBA until his Achilles injury, until those final few years, I mean, that's very hard to do with the amount of minutes he played, the burden he had on his shoulders, all the extra games, playoffs, titles, Olympics, all of that stuff, playing 40 minutes a night, and he's still great right. at 30-plus, playing in a league of 20-year-olds. I mean, it's very, very hard just to have a 10-year career, let alone be a top-five player for that amount of time right. or longer.
And then you see, like, a Jason Terry, who's like, he just got hot for 1 year, you know, and he had a decent career, is okay, but for maybe a couple months, he was a star.
Well, that's why it goes back to that reputation game, right? Once you develop a reputation as a clutch shooter or as a lazy player or as a knucklehead or whatever it is, it really sticks with you. Jason Terry has gotten opportunity after opportunity as a result of that reputation. Josh Smith, because he has a certain reputation, just signed a 3-month deal in China and hopefully he's going to get an NBA deal once that's up.
Speaking of that, I'm glad you brought that up. We're just all over the place and we'll get close to wrapping this up soon. I told you at the beginning of the year the signing that I loved in Los Angeles. They went and got my man Yijin Lian. And I thought it was going to be a good deal because I was like, man, he's a great rebounder. He killed it over the summer. And for whatever reason, I was like, oh, he's going to be a big deal here. And what happened with that? What went wrong?
Well, I think what's really where Yi really does well in the international game is there's not the same level of competition that you find in the NBA, especially the defensive end of the floor. Yi has a tough time because he can't guard power forwards and he's not strong enough to guard centers.
He can't play a 3 or 4. Like, there's no role for him.
So where do you put him defensively? And if you're going to put him with a guy who's a rim protector, then you're asking him to chase a stretch 4 all around the perimeter. It's probably not going to work out too well. And unfortunately for him, he has not been able to show with any consistency at the NBA level that he can space the floor, that he can really effectively shoot the 3 with consistently. And there's no one skill where you can say, well, he may not be able to give me this, but I know he can give me that, right?
So do you think it was like an attitude problem? Or no. Do you think it was just a, man, I truly don't fit in here, I'm going to have to go?
I think Yi was very cognizant in the type of role he would have had he made the team. And that was going to be as a bench warmer without a real purpose on that team, because you've got Mozgov, you've got Black at center, you've got Randall, and you've got Nance at power forward, right? Where does Yi find his minutes, if there are even any of them? And I think, let's compare it to a job, right? If you're at the end of the line in your job, and you know that you're going to get fired, more likely than not, you probably want to resign before you get fired.
That's true.
You sort of save face in that regard. And I think that's what his camp decided to do when they asked for his release instead of having him be released, is they sort of salvaged that stock a little bit. And you know what? It was the right decision to release him because Thomas Robinson outplayed him. They wanted to keep Meta World Peace, who will only be called Ron Artest on this podcast moving forward.
Correct.
And
I have a jersey in my closet. It says Artest.
That's what we
That's
will call
who
him.
He still is.
So Artest, you know, they wanted to keep Artest around. Thomas Robinson played his way onto the roster. But the real X factor, and more, and he's been that much in the Lakers season as well so far, it was the impressive play of Nick Young. Myself included, I think many people, myself included, did not expect Nick Young to be on this roster. He showed absolutely nothing last season, did not take the game seriously, and probably should have been let go at the end of the year. But the Lakers said, you know what, we don't want to eat the money. We know we can't trade him for anything. Let's see if Luke Walton can sort of salvage him. And maybe Nick Young grew up a little and looked himself in the mirror and said, this might be my last opportunity to show that I can play. And he really brought it in the preseason, both defensively and offensively, and earned himself a real role with the team.
I love when people are smart enough to weigh their own opportunities and go, man, this might be my last chance.
And a last chance in the NBA can be very powerful.
Well, because too often people don't recognize then how many guys are out of the league and then they're broke after making $20 million because they didn't recognize the opportunity that they had. They didn't take the right chances. You give me a $100 million contract, I'm going to take that first $20 million and just see what I could do with it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to spend it lavishly.
It's hard. It's very hard to transition, especially for a lot of these guys who come from absolutely nothing. And then all of a sudden have absolutely everything.
Right.
It's going from 0 to 60 in less than 1 second flat. And how do you navigate those waters and if you've never been captain of that ship? It's a hard job. But that's sort of why they get paid those absurd amounts of money, is because it goes with the territory. And hopefully they've put more programs in place to sort of educate these guys on the transition from college to the pros. And hopefully they've created a greater education for what makes for a good investment, what makes for a bad investment, and both in terms of money and in terms of yourself, right? Don't be in the wrong place at the wrong time, things like that.
You know what, for me, one of the interesting things is, like, I've been poor for so long, and now that I'm making some money, if, like, being rich legitimately terrifies me. The idea that I'll wake up one morning and there's $1 million in my account or something, I'm almost scared because I go, oh, I don't want what's happened to so many wealthy people to happen to me. I got to just sit and think for a while. I always said, if I had $1 million, you wouldn't know for a while because I wouldn't spend anything. I wouldn't act any differently. I'd have to play my poker face. Let me just take a month where I don't spend any money and I just think for a second, go, man, what can I do? You ever hear that story about the London bombings?
Why don't you go ahead and tell it?
Winston Churchill. So when the Nazis were bombing, and I learned this from Lost, so it might not actually be true. They're asking a character, they're like, why aren't you doing anything? And he goes, I'm reading. He goes, yeah, you need to do something. And he goes, man, you know what Winston Churchill did every night during the bombings? He read. And people go, man, why are you reading? And he goes, I'm thinking. It's just sometimes you just got to take some time to think before you act rashly. You give me $1 million, you give me $20 million, I'm just going to sit there for a minute and go, well, hold on a second.
I think too many people, basketball players or people in general, react out of emotion in all sorts of circumstances. I think a lot of other people listen to others for the purpose of responding instead of for the purpose of understanding. And if you can listen for the purpose of understanding, and if you can learn to think on your own and not act out of emotion, but act out of logic and after the pros and cons have been weighed, well, generally you're going to be a lot more successful.
You just explained everything that's going wrong in America right now. And really everything that's happening, from the presidential election to the Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, to the Cubs winning the World Series and people tearing apart Chicago, to being down 3-1, coming back and winning. And, you know, so you're like, oh, I'm going to be Kevin Durant as a superstar, and I'm going to go to Golden State and play for them. To, you know, all these things, I just need you to sit down and think for a minute. Well, I don't want you to act rashly.
And I wonder... Not that this is a get off my lawn moment, right? But not that I blame social media, but I wonder how much in the rise of Twitter and that instant analysis, that 140 character has to be, you know, this ADD generation, for lack of a better way to say it, you know, 6 minutes.
Get off my lawn.
6 minutes is suddenly a long video to watch, apparently. And I wonder how much of that has caused this desire to act immediately for better or worse instead of really taking the time to analyze the situation and then arriving at a decision. Because it's all about being first, right? It's no longer can you be right or wrong, but if you're first, that's what people remember. And I think that is sort of out of whack when we come to judging what we should be interpreting.
That's beautiful. I don't want to follow that.
And for reference, what Dr. Shark is referencing is I actually just showed him a picture of my butt.
You're a freak. That's not what happened.
P.D. Pablo, Freakalik, was actually inspired by me.
If we were going to leave on that beautiful note and you just had to go and ruin it like that.
P.D. Pablo ruins nothing.
I don't know what you're talking about. For Primetime Ethan Noroff, I'm Jack Basketball. I don't know what show this is called yet, so I can't tell you what show. But next time we're on, you know, I'm sure I'll have some sort of slogan or a catchphrase or something.
We're also willing to take listener submissions for the name of the show.
Right? No, we're not. That's okay. Not true.
I guess
that's not going to happen.
Well, never mind.
So for all of us here at To Be Named, thank you for listening.
We appreciate it. Fuck her out.